Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for culturalmining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. During the short-lived Arab Spring, idealists returned to the Middle East and North Africa to Egypt, Tunisia, Bahrain, to usher in a new era of democracy. But many were sorely disappointed by the aftermath that led to mass arrests, coups, crackdowns. Nowadays, there are new shocking stories torn from the headlines each day. We read about young men from France, the UK, and North America suddenly appearing on YouTube, pledging their loyalty to previously unheard of rebellious armies. Think of ISIS in Syria and Iraq, Al-Shabaab in Kenya. Are they fanatics or patriots? Well, a new documentary looks at it differently. Hamid and Tarek, two ordinary guys, students in their 20s in Montreal, originally sent to Canada by their families in Libya. But they, too, hear the call when civil war breaks out in Libya. Best friends, they rush over to join the rebellion against military dictator Muammar Gaddafi. But once there, they face the very real death, destruction, and horror that war can bring. Their story is told in a brand new documentary called First to Fall that premiered at the Human Rights Watch Film Festival in New York City a few weeks ago. It closely follows the two men from Canada to the front lines in Libya. The filmmakers, directors Rachel Beth Anderson and Tim Grucha, were there in the midst of it all, documenting their stories. And I'm very happy to have them here by telephone from New York City to tell us more about it. Hi, Rachel. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. So Hamid and Tarek first learned about the rebellion while they were living in Canada. How did they hear about it?
Well, the same way a lot of people were, you know, we were watching everything unfold through YouTube videos that were being uploaded, and they were getting phone calls, but everything was cut out. So people depended on the cell phone videos and the people that were on the streets to begin showing what was actually happening on the ground.
And what did they see?
They were watching rather disturbing videos. What's interesting about the Libyan uprising, as opposed to Tunisia and Egypt prior to it, was that this was the first time that the dictator, let's say Colonel Gaddafi, the leader of the country, turned his military and militias against his own people. So while Tunisia and Egypt were relatively unviolent, Libya quickly became very, very bloody. And so they were seeing their own countrymen being gunned down in the street. And that was basically what inspired them to get on a plane and go over there.
And where did you two become involved in their story?
I had been living and working in Cairo as a journalist about 8 months before the Arab Spring started. And Tim and I worked together in Egypt on the Arab Spring, on the, you know, the revolution in Egypt. And once the revolution was finished, I saw what was happening in Libya and decided that, you know, I had a week-long assignment and I really wanted to get over and to see how I could help tell the story of what was happening in that country, because it was such a closed-off place for so long, and I was very curious to see, you know, the next stage in the Arab Spring. So I jumped into a taxi with a couple other journalists and rode across the border into Libya, and my week-long assignment quickly finished, and I realized that this story was evolving, not from, you know, from a revolution into a war, and that I was meeting characters and people with incredible stories that I really decided I needed to stay and tell. Even though there was other journalists that were leaving as the news cycle moved on, I decided I really needed to stick it out and follow what was happening on the ground in Libya.
I was with Rachel covering the Egyptian revolution, and when the government was ousted, that was when I left, and I actually returned to New York. Rachel, who was based in Cairo, continued on to Libya. And I think that based on what we'd seen with the other revolts, that this might take 2 weeks, maybe a month, and to everyone's surprise, it actually turned into a really bogged-down war, and Rachel was over there for 6 months?
7 months.
7 months.
So while you were there, you met Hamid and Tarek, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And what happened to them when they arrived in Libya? Tell me a bit about their story.
Well, No, it was interesting because when you first show up and you're trying to get your bearings and you see this place as it did in the film that has remnants of battles with burned out cars and burnt out buildings, you know, then all of a sudden, you know, they're trying to find their place in this revolution. And as it turned into a war, their decision was that they needed to be on the battlefield and they needed to be at the front line. And at that point, it had moved out of Benghazi, which was controlled by the rebels, and it was in Mithrata. So their goal was to get to Mithrata by any means. And with Hamid, he was lucky enough to, you know, find a way onto a boat and get a camera, which became his key to the front line. But Tariq was left behind in Benghazi because he didn't have the same connections as Hamid did to get to this city, where they only really were letting in people that they trusted, because in the war, they didn't know who would be, you know, their enemy. And so they really wanted to only let people to the front line that they knew were on their side.
Let's talk about that a little bit more, because from what I understand, the militias were divided into two types. There were the local indigenous militias, and then there were outside religious groups that came in. So which ones did Hamid and Tariq end up joining?
Hamid and Tariq joined the local group. They called themselves the Freedom Fighters. They were the Freedom Fighters. They had grown up in Libya, so they knew all the guys that were on the ground there, and they knew the people that were organizing. So they were able to join these groups. And in Libya, you really have to be introduced to the next person, and then you're almost like family to them. So that's how they moved around. The religious groups didn't really come in until later on. And, you know, Hamid and Tariq were much further into the war at that point.
Okay.
And also, Hamid and Tariq were very westernized, and that they'd left lives of like any sort of college life that we might know in the West. When they went over there, it actually over a period of time, the revolution seemed to perhaps solidify their belief, their spiritual belief, but they never really moved on to any sort of Islamic or fundamentalist sort of revolution. For them, it was simply to oust the leadership.
So, and patriotism and to get rid of the dictator.
That's correct.
For Rachel, as a woman, you're in Libya, but the film is almost, the rebels are almost completely composed of men. Where are the women?
The women were, you know, still a really important part of the revolution, but they were more behind the scenes and, you know, not necessarily on the battlefield. And what I was really interested in is these young men who had left their lives, similar to what I had, you know, grown up in, and come and wanted to fight, even without any previous training. So, you know, it's sad to say, you know, they always say you have to kill your darlings, and I had amazing women characters who I did follow, but they weren't really the story that I was trying to tell.
They
were out there with video cameras, not necessarily on the front lines, but they were working in the city. They were, you know, making food for the soldiers. They were, you know, there as support and protesting, and they were actually one of the first protesters out on the street that started, you know, that helped push forward the uprising. And they don't show up in the film as often as I would have, you know, have hoped, but they were a really important part of the revolution.
And how were you treated as a female reporter in this revolution?
You know, I've worked in Egypt and Syria and in other revolutions, and Libya was a very different place because there really hadn't been a journalist presence prior to the revolution, and they saw how important it was to have these Western journalists that were getting the word out. You were almost a precious commodity, and there was a lot of respect for me for staying as long as I did and not leaving, and also risking, you know, my own life in this country that I didn't have an attachment to. So there was a lot of mutual respect and trust that was needed on both sides for me to even be able to stay as long as I did. I mean, it wasn't easy all the time, that's for sure, and there was, you know, a lot of cultural differences, but, you know, I really was able to stay as long as I did because the Libyan people were so generous and they saw the benefit of having me there following them around 24/7.
Tim, many people say that this was the most fully documented war in history due to the fact that all the soldiers had their own cameras on their cell phones and were recording everything. Did this help or hinder the making of the film?
This was a huge help. And in fact, I would say that it's only surpassed by the war in Syria. And as the availability of cameras and mobile phones is just so prolific now. But it helped a great deal. I've spent the last more than a decade covering conflict from the Balkans, Iraq, Afghanistan, and always putting myself into situations and as close to the front line as possible. The amazing thing that we could do with this film was that my advice to Rachel while she was on the ground was to keep away from the front line. Not only would she be putting herself at risk, but there were guys out there who treated the camera or their cameras or their phones as if they were weapons themselves in the fight for freedom. And so there were hundreds of people documenting the conflict, and we managed to gather most of that, or I should say Rachel managed to gather hours and hundreds of hours mm-hmm. of that footage. And most of the conflict footage that you see in the film is shot by those guys on the ground.
So, Rachel, were you at the front line at all personally?
Yes, I was. You know, as Tim said, his advice to me was, you know, you don't need to be in these places all the time. And his other advice was, you know, you go to the front line when it's necessary to tell your story. You get what you need and you get out. And I kept that in my head because this was my first conflict that I had worked in. And so I, you know, I did go with these guys, but there was times where they also didn't want to bring me into the firefights that they were going into or the certain battles because I would be a distraction in a way as well because they'd be worried about me. But also at some point, you know, Hamid had told me that some of the guys asked him not to bring me out there anymore because I was ruining the so-called jihadi mood. Whereas, you know, they hadn't seen very many women for a while, so it was better for me sometimes to stay away for my own safety and for theirs. So I think it was, you know, that's what made this film wonderful, though, I believe, is because I cared so much more about what was happening to them away from the battlefield and what happened when they would turn their cameras off. So that was my job. It was to really be there in their transformations and when they really, when you could see the impact of what they had just gone through that day on the battlefield.
So I don't want to reveal any more than you want to tell us, but can you describe the dangers and the very serious dangers that were faced by Hamid and Tariq?
Well, I mean, as you see in the film, and as I think Tim can explain from other conflicts that he's worked in, you know, it's hard. You never really see the enemy. And especially with these young men that were untrained, and by the end, you know, they became really solid soldiers, but you see them learning and you see them evolving, but they were up against an army that had incredible weaponry, and the only thing that they could really gather was the weapons that they would take from the Gaddafi soldiers when they would have a battle and they would, you know, be able to overtake them. So it was really a David and Goliath moment, I think, is what, you know, you see them encountering when they're on the battlefield.
I think one of the most serious effects of what happened was the duration of the war. And so the long-term battle fatigue that they suffered was not only physical, but psychological. And I think that in some ways, without, again, revealing too much of the film, what happened to these young guys who entered in very naively, making jokes about the only time they fired a gun was playing Call of Duty on their computer game, it's a slight metaphor for the whole situation in Libya, where they left really quite traumatized by their experience. They sacrificed themselves. They were pawns in a larger fight. And although you could say victorious, they suffered for their victory.
And looking back now, do you think what they did and what they took part in was a largely positive experience or a negative experience or maybe bittersweet?
You know, I think I'd have to say right now, I think you know, they would never say that they regret anything they did. That's the thing. They fully, I don't think, you know, has time, not enough time has passed, I think, for there to be a lot of reflection, because they're still dealing with, you know, I think the entire country is still dealing with what it has gone through. And I think there will be a lot of growing pains. But in this situation, you know, I think there was a reason that they needed to pick up their guns. And there was a reason that sometimes nonviolent reaction, you know, revolutions don't always work. And I think there needs to be patience for these countries to have time to acclimate and to change their societies. And there just needs to be people on the ground, which there are, that keep pushing and really are hopeful for the future. And I do still think that there's a really bright future down the line for Libya.
I think we have to hope and believe that it was somehow a positive experience, although that currently Libya right now is somewhat in a state of almost anarchy. At the end of the day, the majority of the population did rise up and did decide they wanted change after 4 decades under one dictator.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with filmmakers Rachel Beth Anderson and Tim Grucha about their new documentary, First to Fall. This is Daniel Garber, the movies for CIUT 89.5 FM and my website, culturalmining.com.